You should still feel confident if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. And here's the thing. We're going to stick to our routine. We play this song every Friday. We did it throughout the regular season. The regular season is what got the Toronto Maple Leafs to the playoffs. We're going to continue doing what we can do on our end of superstitious things to do. And I got to play this song before the weekend. Game 2 going tomorrow for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They lost Game 1 to the Washington Capitals 3-2 in overtime. Looking at all the positives to pull out of that, having the 2-0 lead in the game, Mitch Marner getting a goal 95 seconds in, becoming the first Leafs teenager to score a playoff game since Daniel Marois. Remember that name? We kept bringing up when it came to breaking.
What was the other record involving him? Do you remember which one of the million it's been this year?
The assists.
Was that the one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So... And you know what? I actually liked his celebration, or perhaps lack thereof. Because, I mean, I know Mitch Marner in the beginning when he scored, remember, they were kind of...
He was laying on the ground.
No, I know. But see, in the past, like, even his own teammates were making fun of him for the way he scored goals and the way he celebrated. And it was like a little kid out on the ice. But there's that whole saying a lot of times, like, act like you've been there before. So there was something about even after he got up, there was the, yep, scored. But you know what? There's still, obviously, there was a lot of game to be played. He only scored 95 seconds
in. Yeah, that's the big thing.
But I still like that response. I still feel like it said something about the mentality, right, and how they were feeling and how they were still staying focused.
Yeah. No, so, I agree. It was obviously a really good start, dream start to the game. And the first period was perfect, exactly how you would have wanted it to go if you're a Leaf.
Yeah, out shooting them, getting the heavy shifts that we learned Mike Babcock keeps track of during the games. William Nylander came out flying. So this is what we wanted to keep discussing here in the noon hour as we welcome you back to Leafs Lunch, now on TSN 4, Arnie Petrilla alongside Patrick O'Sullivan. All four lines were rolling for both teams. We saw a lot of the fourth line of the Caps, a lot of the fourth line of the Leafs. I mean, Boyle, Kapanen, and Martin were out there quite a bit. We saw Marty Marinson and even Connor Carrick maybe put up some more minutes than we originally thought. At least Marinson would play, and he played over 13 minutes, close to 14. Obviously, you factor in a little bit of overtime, which we'll get into. But William Nylander came out flying. The first 8 shots of the Toronto Maple Leafs, 3 of them were from him. He ended the first period with 4 shots. He was leading the way. He ended the game with 4 shots. What happened to that line?
Well, I think it's a number of different things. I think there was some matchup difficulties that they had.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, you've really seen it. And if you go back even the last 3 or 4 games of the regular season when everything was starting to tighten up and these games are important to all the teams that are involved, they're playing with a guy that has no skill on their left wing. And at this point, you know, you want to giggle when I say that because you think it's about, like, you know, I bring it up so much, but it's because it's true. And now you're really seeing it when there's no time and there's no space. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make plays for Austin Matthews in a game like that or for Nick Backstrom. You know, that Washington's top line was invisible too.
Mm-hmm. Kadri line
was
really
good. If it's hard for Austin Matthews to make plays, what do you think it's like for Zach Hyman? And the other part of this that nobody takes into consideration is how he feels. Like, do you think that Zach Hyman doesn't know that he has a hard time making plays? Do you think Zach Hyman doesn't know that he has 2 even strength goals in 60 games? Like, do you think he doesn't know that the last time Matthews assisted on one of his goals was December 13th? He knows all this stuff, I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, and this is where then now we look at it from another perspective, right? Is this where Mike Babcock, I also talked about short leashes heading into the playoffs. We know that he's had his system. Mike Babcock likes to stick to it. He has his pairings that he loves, and in particular his lines that he doesn't change up, even if they're going through any kind of mini drought, whether it be games lost or whether it be guys not picking up points, but he sticks to them. But how short does that leash become now in the playoffs? And do you think Mike Babcock would even see it that way after last night's game? Because we just spent the first hour of this show talking about so many positives that you can still pull from this game. So do you think that's still a little bit of a consolation to the coach for him to say, well, I'm not going to change anything?
I don't know. I don't think there's any chance in hell that there's going to be a change going into game 2. But say game two goes the way that game one does and your top line has nothing to show for two games worth of ice time. At what point do you get to where you say, we got to do something here because we're wasting maybe our two best forwards? And they got to be better, too. I'm not blaming the play on of what the other two guys did on Hyman. It's just the collective situation that they have to deal with.
Yeah.
So
let's break down some of these players a little bit more, shall we, as we get to grades of the game.
It's time to find out who made the grade. This is Leafs Lunch. Grades of the game.
Grades of the game brought to you by Borrowell.com, Canada's leading online provider of personal loans and free credit scores. So, Sully, would you like to go first?
Sure, why not?
Give her.
The Bozak line, I'm going to give them an A. Obviously, the start, we talked about that to open the show. The Marner goal. I mean, that is, with all the concern and the talk about how the Leafs were going to react because of the newness of the situation and the young guys who've never played in a playoff game, they had a great start. That Bozak line was a big part of it. Really, the whole team was pretty solid in the first period. But that line, the Bozak line, was the only line on the Leafs that was able to generate anything off the rush. And that's because that's what they're good at. That's how they've scored most of their goals in the regular season, too. They're not a cycle line like the Kadri line or Matthews. So, I mean, if you get that kind of game from that line night in and night out, that's their job. You know, you create a goal, didn't have a lot of, you know, power plays. There's only the one in the game, I think, right? Only the one power play.
Yeah, where Lars Eller tried to kill Mertens.
So that's where those guys are going to have to play a big role, too. You get into a game where you have four or five power plays. Those guys are going to have to contribute on that. But 5-on-5, they did their job. They weren't in their zone much. You know, they in the first period, because of the way things went, Trotz had to go away from two different matchups. One was the Kadri one on Backstrom. And the other was the Bozak on Eller, because that was not working out well in their favor either. So that's a really good game from the Bozak line, JVR and Marner in particular. So A for them. My other grade, Marty Marincin.
Oh. What are you going to give him?
F.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
What do you mean, really?
I get, what? You know what? Yeah, it's
so,
okay.
So let me ask you this question.
Okay, yeah.
If the guy does something that, you know, on top of Anderson playing that overtime goal the wrong way. But here's a guy that simply can't make that play. It's just a play you don't make at that level. You watch the games tonight and let me know one time, especially in a critical situation like that, where a guy has time. He wasn't under any pressure. A guy has time, the puck on a stick, has two other options that are obvious. And he chooses to do what he did.
I know.
He's
you
scared.
Know
He's scared to make a play, and it's not even really his fault.
It's just so crappy because he actually held his own for a guy we all thought would be even worse.
Well, the second goal is his fault too. So, I mean, he held his own. He played 13 minutes, but he's basically the reason two goals went in the net in a playoff game.
Would you look at that second goal as his? Or
yeah, no, it's his because, well, there's a lot of things that happen after, but if he plays that the right way and he's tighter and he steps up on that guy, there's no play to be made. That puck is either turned over or it ends up behind the Leafs net. So that's the way I look at that. Now, you know, if you want to look at the second goal, you could go into, I don't know why, Austin Matthews is trying to go down on his knees and block a shot in the slot. And then you can look at
Nylander just kind of stood there.
Nylander lets Williams go by him and put it in an open net. But that stuff, you don't get to that point if Marincin makes a better play. And you don't get to the point where Tom Wilson throws a bad angle shot that surprises Freddie Anderson if you make a better play with the puck that you are expected to make as an NHL player. So Marincin F, and also this is on the coach. You put a guy in who hasn't played. He's played five games in 3 months or whatever it is. And Like, what do you expect?
Yeah, why is he out in OT? I get why you need to utilize him during the game, and you're down a defenseman, and he ate up over 13 minutes, and Carrick ate up just over 14.
Well,
but why then in overtime, the golden goal, would you have...
Okay, it's not the golden goal.
The golden
goal. Just game one of the playoffs.
No, but I'm saying it's the like sudden death, whatever you want to call it. I just hate using the term sudden death because it's just, to me, it's morbid. I just use golden goal. You get the goal, game's over. So it's the golden goal. Like, why would you have him playing in overtime? I'm just also curious. Like, why wouldn't you limit his minutes at that point?
Well, it's a good question, but the problem is, how do you know how long overtime is going to go? You know, you have a game that goes two or three overtimes. Now, if you haven't played Marty Marincin for the first two, can you put him out in the third? Now, at this point, when Hunwick and Polak have at that point would have played like 35 minutes, you can't put him out if he hasn't played for two periods.
Yeah, they're hooked up to oxygen.
You have to sprinkle in some shifts. That's the only way you can do it. So again, you put a guy in a situation that he can't handle, and he delivers. Pretty simple. I would be shocked if that guy plays another shift in the NHL for the Leafs.
You think he'd make the change to Marchenko?
You have to.
If Zaitsev is not ready, which, by the way, we're hearing it's just an optional skate for the Toronto Maple Leafs today, which if Zaitsev doesn't take to the ice, you can't think he'd be playing tomorrow.
No, there's no chance. Can't play. And it's not his fault. I actually feel bad for the kid because he's been continuously put into situations all year where he just can't handle it. So those are my grades.
Ugh. That was not a highlight he wanted to make. So my grades I'm giving, we've been discussing how the Kadri line was phenomenal last night, and we said that that would be a crucial line because they play on the edge, but don't be undisciplined, and they played on the edge and were disciplined. So Kadri, Komarov, and Brown were fantastic. In particular, I'm highlighting Connor Brown and giving him a B+. He was so physical. He was everywhere. Just short of putting up a point, I just thought that he had a really good game.
Their best line.
Yeah, he did not look like he was a rookie out there last night, that's for sure. So I thought Connor Brown deserved a B+. And then I'm going to give a little love to the fourth line for the Toronto Maple Leafs because it's a strong fourth line. Brian Boyle was dominant in the faceoff circle. There was a time there when we talk about heavy shifts where they were putting so much pressure on the Washington Capitals. They just kept forcing them to ice the puck over and over and over again. Would have been nice to take advantage of always getting those offensive zone faceoffs and trying to make something happen. But I thought they did really well. Matt Martin, you could see the emotions were running a little high. He ended up taking a penalty.
Not a good one either.
And I just think it really sucks that, of course, they were the ones out on the ice in that overtime. Like, again, I felt like so many things went well. And I have a hard time looking at that one moment to then say everything went to hell because I still think the fourth line had a great game. Frederik Andersen had a phenomenal game. And I just think that goal, I don't want to dumb it down for Tom Wilson, but I just think it was fluky.
No, it's not fluky at all. It's a smart shot.
I'm still calling it fluky because Andersen was making unbelievable saves all night long. And it's like, oh, that's the one. But I still think the fourth line did really well for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They were not a liability.
No, not at all. And they haven't been all year, which is why they're going to play. We talked about this earlier in the first hour. Matthews plays 18 minutes a night. That's your first line center. That's a top 15 centerman in the entire league. So he only plays 18 minutes. So where else are you getting the ice time from? Mm-hmm. Your fourth line is going to play 10, 12 minutes. And that's not going to change because it's the playoffs. That's the way Washington plays too. Beagle's line played more than Eller's line last night. So that's the other thing on Twitter, which, as we know, is a cesspool. But people start sending me tweets when that goal goes in. Like, what's the fourth line doing on the ice with Marincin? Well, what's Washington's fourth line doing on the ice?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? That's exactly what you want. If you're going to put Marincin on the ice and if you're going to have your fourth line on the ice, you want them out there against Washington's fourth line. It couldn't have been a better situation to have them on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're fourth-line guys for a reason. They're not going to wow you making plays. Just like Washington's fourth line isn't either.
Mm-hmm.
But they have value, and you have to play them, especially in the playoffs, because, again, if you get into the second and third overtime and your fourth line hasn't played, you can't put them on the ice then. They haven't touched the ice in 6 hours. It would be ridiculous, right?
Well, and especially in this series where the Washington Capitals roll all four lines, if you want to continue and have that kind of depth and match that as well, so guys aren't hooked up to oxygen tanks and you have to roll all four lines too. And I just find that the Leafs fourth line held their own. I thought Kapanen, I said this earlier too, throwing the body around, I thought he had a really strong game. It just, you know, B plus for them. Again, it just, I feel like it all just boils down to that one play. But this is how the playoffs work. We always say the margin for error is so slim that you can probably just say it's non-existent. So when you make the one error, that's what costs you. And I think they played such a steady game. Yeah, and then
it's usually two errors consecutively that result in a goal in this league. Sometimes only one. But this time of year, because everybody's on, they're making safer plays, it usually has to be two things that go real wrong for you. And that's how the game ended last night.
Grades of the game brought to you by Borrowell.com. Do you know your financial grade? With digital innovator Borrowell.com, you can check your credit score for free and get approval on a personal loan up to $35,000. Get graded today at Borrowell.com. I wanted to play this clip quickly. This is the Mike Babcock clip. This was a couple days ago, as we're still on this whole topic of fourth line. So Tom Wilson, as I've dubbed him the traitor because he's from Toronto, he is part of that fourth line. And Mike Babcock, obviously, in the couple days leading up to their game on Thursday, they had a lot of time, right? So he was, you know, barking away at practice, and he was very vocal, blowing the whistle, holding court with the media. And he was asked this particular question when it came to the Washington Capitals' fourth line.
How do you deal with a guy like Wilson, Mike, and you know he's going to be in your crease and in the goalie's face and doing what he does?
Well, you know, and nothing against Wilson because he works hard and all that, but he's not as big a concern as lots of people on their team. So, you know, I mean, he's a forechecker and he works hard. I think their fourth line has been real good for them. And saying that, they got a lot of players that we'll concern ourselves with more. And we have some big guys, too. If it just wants to get physical or fisticuffs, we can look after that, no problem. You know, I think the big thing Washington has going for them is they got good depth right through.
Wilson! And he's the one that comes through for the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, there's no issue with that comment until the part where he says, oh, they got other guys we got to worry about more. You don't comment on other teams' players unless it's going to be positive. That's just rule one, especially in the playoffs. Because guess what happens? They go and ask Wilson. Hey, Babcock said this, and Wilson handled it really well. He said, well, he's actually got a point. It's true, but now Trotz knows, now that's public, and now you run into a situation where the guy ends up scoring the game-winning goal in overtime. Like,
whoops!
And just avoid it. Just avoid it. Don't comment on other teams' players. Just don't do it.
And today, Barry Trotz already dropping a reference to John Drews, who was part of the Washington Capitals way back when, and he had a season, 88-89, where in 48 games he put up 8 goals. Or sorry, 89-90, 45 games he put up 8 goals in the playoffs. 15 games played, he put up 14 goals. I mean, that's some pretty lofty expectations after game one for Tom Wilson, but that's what Barry Trotz is doing already.
Yeah, and that's fine. And now we're going to play the game in the media, which is what the coaches do, but Wilson was a really good junior player. I think at some point, you know, even as soon as next year, Washington's going to be losing some wingers to free agency. Mm. This is a guy that's going to be able to go up and play with more offensive players. This isn't a guy who's a bum by any means. He just happens to play on the fourth line in Washington because that's how deep they are. Moral of the story is, don't say anything about the other team's players, and you're fine.
We got a lot more to discuss. Our TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie is going to be joining us, as well as former NHL goalie Kevin Weeks, as you continue to listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050, streaming online and on TV, TSN 4. I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a lot of weird things coming out of Vegas next year with the team already. Gerard Gallant, new head coach, posing alongside, I think it's a Britney Spears wax figure, and she's barely dressed, and what?
Good PEI boy. Do you think he ever thought in his wildest dreams he'd be doing stuff like that?
He does not look comfortable at all in the photo. Not at all, yet it is very funny. Welcome on in to Leafs Lunch here TSN 1050, TSN.ca on the TV, TSN 4. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Leafs Lunch 1050. Andy alongside Sully talking the Leafs 3-2 overtime loss to the Washington Capitals. Later on today, another episode of the Bobcast will be coming out, and Mr. Bob McKenzie is joining us now here as his Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent, guys. How you doing?
We're good. Obviously, breaking down this game, and it just seems like, I mean, it's mixed emotions because, you know, the Leafs lose, but yet they did so many things right in that game. If you're in that room, how are you feeling?
I think as well as could be expected. I mean, you know, if you, would you feel better if you got beat 7-1, 5-2? I mean, you know, it cuts both ways. Here's my, I guess what I'm trying to say is that there's no momentum from game to game in the Stanley Cup playoffs. There just isn't. It's a clean slate when you start the next game, and whatever you did the last game no longer matters. So on that end of it, I mean, you can cut it both ways. The Leafs could look at it and say, yeah, we were awesome, and they could go out the next game and get absolutely smoked if they're not on top of their game. The flip side is if they'd gotten beaten 7-1, they might have been saying to themselves, geez, this went about as well as everybody thought it was going to go outside of this room. Maybe we are in trouble. Maybe we are overmatched. So if I were a Leaf player, I would take from that game, we had a good game plan. We didn't have stage fright. We executed extremely well. We lost. Nobody said we were going to win four straight. Let's move on and be prepared for game two and make sure that we execute the game plan at least as well as we did last game and give ourselves a chance to win.
You think that might be the most winnable game they have in this series?
It could be. It could very well be. Maybe Washington's going to completely wake up here, and maybe as good as the Leaf game plan seemed to be and as much as we saw from them last night, that there was incredible stage fright and jitters on the part of the Washington Capitals. They've put that behind them. They've got their confidence, and now they're going to step on the throat of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is that possible? Absolutely, it's possible. But you know what? I would still tend to look at the glass half full if I'm the Leafs and say, all we can do is what we did last game and give ourselves that opportunity to be in the game and have a chance to win. And if we do that, then we've done well because we're playing one of the very best teams in the National Hockey League, and we want to make sure that we give ourselves every opportunity to be competitive and win a game.
Heading into the playoffs, the talk, especially when it comes to the young guys like Austin Matthews and even Connor McDavid, was we know what they can do in the regular season. Can they find that other gear heading into the playoffs? And I know it's always you got to wait and see. You don't really know. But at least based on game one, are you concerned that Austin Matthews, and in particular just that line, didn't really do anything last night?
No, because then you'd have to apply the same logic to Alexander Ovechkin, because he did nothing last night either. You know, he was as innocuous in the game. Backstrom and Ovechkin were as innocuous in the game as Matthews' line was. So, you know, what narrative do you dream up then for Alexander Ovechkin? And I don't think that Alexander Ovechkin is going to be quiet all series, and I don't think Austin Matthews will be quiet all series, and I don't think Connor McDavid will be as quiet as he was in game one. And when I say as quiet as Connor McDavid was, he still blew by Brent Burns in the third period and could have won the hockey game with if he'd finished off an unbelievable burst around the outside. But that said, overall, his game wasn't as good in game one of the playoffs as it has been down the stretch. And there's no doubt in my mind that he'll find his range. And there's no doubt in my mind that Matthews is likely to find the range. And if he doesn't, then that becomes the narrative that, you know, 19-year-old kid figuring his way in the playoffs. Or it's one of those 5 or 6-game stretches that he had several times this year where he looked pretty average.
The difference, though, is that Washington will change their lines. If another game goes by where, you know, Backstrom and Ovechkin are as, you know, invisible as they were, that will change. And that's my question with the Leafs. They've changed nothing by design, but now it's do or die. You know, how far does it have to go before you realize that the guy that you have on his left wing can't make a play?
Well, that's 82 games, I guess. You know, 83, I guess. you know, he's a process-driven coach, Mike Babcock is. And that's not to say he won't change things up at some point, but I don't anticipate, I'd be surprised if we see any marked difference in the lineup for Game 2 than we saw in Game 1, because he's going to look at it and say, we played well, could have won, come back with the same group. Now, at the end of period one, if you're not generating anything, if you're getting pushed around and the matches, there's mismatches all over the ice, then I'm sure he'll switch something up. But I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for 11 and 34 to be split up.
Are we hearing anything? I know it's an optional skate today, and we know they clamp down when it comes to the playoffs, but are we hearing anything more on that blue line with either Zaitsev being ready, Marinson going back in, or will it be Marchenko, or like, is it just kind of the same from game one?
Yeah, you answered your own question by saying it's the playoffs, we know nothing, and we're not likely to know anything. Other than Zaitsev hasn't been skating, if I remember correctly.
No, he hasn't.
And when you get dinged up, and we're assuming it's concussion, but nobody's actually said that, I don't think.
No.
Then, you know, there is a protocol required where, you know, in order to get back in the game, you probably need to get into practice. And so, you know, we're going to need to see Zaitsev on the ice, I would think, before you actually see him on the ice for a game. And that'll be the clear sign that, you know, maybe he's ready to go. And that's the way it was with Freddie. I mean, the couple of times when Freddie got dinged up and people wondered about him, you know, he was practicing in fairly short order, and that gave everybody confidence to believe, okay, well, he's not very far off, and it'll be the same thing with Zaitsev. As for Marinchen, I mean, you know, he threw the puck up the wall last night. It got picked off. It ended up in the back of the net. Was it his fault? Was it Anderson's fault? Take your pick. Was it just a play that happens a lot during a hockey game, and it, unfortunately for the Leafs, wound up in the back of the net? No more blame or credit to be assigned than that. It could well be that too. And I didn't think he was terrible the rest of the night. In fact, I thought the Leaf defense did a really good job, all things considered. I thought Hunwick played really well, 26 plus minutes, and I thought he really stepped up and played well alongside Riley.
That's what I was going to ask you, just your overall thoughts on the defense. And also, I mean, are we surprised that it is guys like Hunwick leading the way and Polak not far behind, where maybe some would think it would be guys like Riley and Gardner really running away with the ice time?
Well, Gardner actually, I think, had the most ice time.
He picked it up in the third, yeah.
Yeah, of anybody last night. Down the stretch, Hunwick and Polak played much better than they have played. They played a little bit more than they had in the past, but not as much as Hunwick played last year, which, you know, it really got to the point where he was playing in such a prominent role that the law of diminishing returns kicked in on too many minutes for a defenseman who should be more of a depth guy. But I think in short bursts for him to go up and play 26 or 27 minutes alongside Riley in a critical role, I thought he was really good last night. I thought he really made a statement. Babcock's never hesitated to rely on Gardner for big minutes. We'll see. But, you know, that the defense was not an issue last night. Can you find specific instances where it was? Absolutely. You can in every hockey game. But overall, the overall tone of the game and how threatening Washington was, and there were times when Anderson had to be the last line of defense, but all things considered, the overall team defensive game of the Leafs in game one was far better than I've seen a lot of the times over the course of this season.
And doesn't that make it more disappointing that you didn't take advantage
yes.
of that? Because
Absolutely.
I personally can't see that playing out again, you know, maybe once, but multiple times, no chance.
You may well be right, Patrick. I mean, if you want to call it the law of averages, or you just want to, water finds its own level, or whatever analogy you want to come up with, you may well be right. And that would certainly, you know, that's the logical form chart, is that Washington is that much better than the Leafs, but they weren't last night. And we'll see. You know, the bigger question I would be curious to see answered is Washington for sure going to respond to how poorly they played last night. That first period, maybe that was just stage fright. Maybe that was just pressure. But you know what? I didn't expect there to be any stage fright or any pressure. I thought this Washington Capitol team is so loaded for bear because of past playoff failures and just that steely sense of exactly what it is we have to do, and we know what it is now, and we're on a mission to redeem ourselves for losing to Pittsburgh last year and yet another playoff failure. And then they came out and played that way. And then even, you know, I was on Edmonton Radio this morning, and they said, well, you know, you can draw some parallels between the Toronto and Edmonton both having 2-0 leads and mm-hmm. both being young teams and losing to the more experienced team. And I'm like, whoa, time out. The Edmonton Oilers got manhandled in period two and period three by the San Jose Sharks in overtime. It wasn't even close. They mailed it in after the first 20 minutes. Looked like they had the game won when it was 2-0. I never felt at any point in last night's game like, oh man, has Washington ever clawed back and taken this game away from the Toronto Maple Leafs until Wilson scored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Is the uncertainty that comes along with playing the Leafs a factor in that?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the fact that, you know, Barry Trotz likes to use Beagle against the other team's best line if he can. And it was interesting that to start the game, Jay Beagle's line drew Austin Matthews' line. And then you saw Kadri and Komarov and Brown were doing a pretty good job, or a very good job, on Backstrom and Ovechkin and Oshie. And suddenly Barry Trotz took Beagle's line away from Matthews and put, in a number of instances there, put Beagle's line against Kadri. So it was almost like, you know what, this Kadri line's causing us some problems right now. So rather than worry about shutting down Austin Matthews, I'm going to try and neutralize Kadri and Komarov to try and free up Ovechkin and Backstrom, and we'll let Beagle and Kadri's line cancel each other out. And then, but it didn't work out because Backstrom and Ovechkin didn't get anything done. And as the game wore on and it became apparent that Bozak, Van Riemsdyk, and Marner were the most dangerous offensive threat for the Leafs. I think Van Riemsdyk had 7 shots on goal. Marner was dancing and mm-hmm. was arguably the most dangerous player on the ice. It suddenly Beagle's line got some Bozak time. And then irony of ironies in the overtime, they end up fourth line versus fourth line, and Wilson puts it in the net.
I mean, the more we talk about this, the more I am feeling good about game two. The more we just kind of go over all the good things that the Leafs did and just the response from the Washington Capitals, which we thought would be so much better. So, Bob, you've been like my therapist. I feel like
Here's the thing. I don't feel good about game two. I don't feel bad about game two. Well, yeah. I just feel nothing for game two because it's a whole new clean slate and it starts all over again. What I would do is I feel good about game one even though I lost, because it gives me the confidence to know that we have a game plan, if executed, that could work. Now it's a matter of going out and actually doing it.
Bobby, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
That is Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It. Monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. Former NHL goalie Kevin Weeks is going to be joining us, and this is where we can get into some pretty heavy Freddie Anderson talk, because other than that OT goal, he was fantastic. Stick around. You continue to listen to Leafs Lunch. They'll rescue you from your car lease. Lease Busters, heroic, maybe, helpful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease. For your lease relief, go to leasebusters.com. As we welcome you back into Leafs Lunch, Annie Petrillo alongside Patrick O'Sullivan. Now let's bring in former NHL goaltender, NHL Network analyst, a good friend, Mr. Kevin Weeks. How you doing, Weeksy?
Hey, P, what's up?
Oh, you know.
What's going on? What's happening?
We're just talking hockey, in particular those, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs, 3-2 overtime loss to the Washington Capitals. But you are our goalie expert, Freddie Anderson. You know, it just stinks that you're going to look at that OT goal and, you know, my goodness, how could he not get that considering all the saves that he made during the game? But overall, what would you take away if you were Freddie Anderson?
Overall, Freddie Anderson, I mean, just the simple fact that he played the game. I mean, he's been banged up, as you know. He got injured a couple of weeks back. The first one a couple of weeks back. And then he had the most recent one, of course, right before the playoffs started. So there's a lot of doubt and speculation, even though Coach Babcock didn't really want to hear it. But the reality was there was a lot of doubt and speculation that Freddie would be able to play. So credit Freddie to playing, first of all. That's amazing, being healthy enough to go. And then putting in that performance, I thought he was incredible. He really was. They needed him to be outstanding, especially playing in that barn. That's a difficult building to play in, especially when the Caps fans are have reason to really cheer, and they're more enthusiastic. So I thought the Leafs got off to a great start, getting out to the lead. Freddie was really, really good to get the young players the confidence, especially on the road. That overtime goal, we talked about it last night on the NHL Network. That's one that he would have stopped. Hmm. No question about it for me. I'm not taking anything away from the shot by Wilson. Tommy Wilson is a fellow Toronto boy, too. So that's a little bit of irony in that. But if you looked at where Wilson was along the wall as a right-hand shot on his strong side, Freddie just wasn't 100% square to it. He left a little daylight in that short side top shelf window, and Tom Wilson was able to exploit it. But all things being equal, Freddie had an outstanding game, and I thought the Leafs showed really well overall yesterday, considering that task against the President's Trophy team.
From a goalie's perspective, on that overtime goal, can you talk a little bit about how when a guy makes a play that you think absolutely is not going to happen, that it's, you know, I obviously didn't play goalie, but I would imagine it's surprising, and now you have to adjust, and then the guy decides to also take a shot from a spot that at this point not a lot of people shoot from anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's it. And you only have a split second, too, to readjust. Once you recognize that, you literally have a split second to say, okay, no problem. Well, we didn't expect that to happen, but let me just rotate my shoulders, especially his glove side shoulder, but more so his blocker side shoulder, and just shift. I mean, had he shifted 3 inches, really, to his glove side post, that puck hits him in the shoulder, whether he's down or not, because Freddie's such a big goalie. But obviously, if he stands up, it hits him. But even in the butterfly, that would have hit him square on the shoulder, and that would have been a routine play, a routine save for him. So that's how quickly the game happened, and that's why it's always important and so critical for goalies to adjust and or readjust depending on what does or doesn't happen in front of you, because mm-hmm. you don't. As you know, Patty, NHL shooters, they don't need very much daylight to pick a spot. And even if you think that you've got a spot covered and there's an inch and a quarter, an NHL shooter, they're deadly accurate. They can put the puck where they want to. And we saw that last night with Wilson. It was a great shot by him, but Freddie typically makes that save. But not to throw any shade at Freddie. I'm a big Freddie fan. He knows that. I loved his game last night. I thought he made a lot of point-blank saves. And, you know, if you look at it also from the Caps perspective, guys, how about Justin Williams? You kidding me? Hmm. Coburg, Ontario, Justin Williams just continues to get it done. I mean, he's clutch. If there is a clutch gene, I don't know what the maximum amount of gene you could have is, but he'd have it in full spades, and he does have it in full spades.
Yeah, I don't like Justin Williams unless, of course, he's wearing the jersey of the team I'm cheering for. So that should tell you, yeah, how good he is. You don't like him, right, until he's playing
right,
for your
exactly.
team. Geez. Right? But now, how tough is it as well for a goalie? And I mean, we've been saying this all season long. It's been a fairly new season for Freddie in that, you know, playing the most games. He is the number one. He doesn't exactly have the strongest defense in front of him. But here you are now. You're going into game one of the playoffs. And one of your top defensemen who eats up a lot of minutes in Nikita Zaitsev is out. And you've got a guy, Marty Marincin, who's drawing in, who you know whose confidence isn't exactly the highest, just given that he hasn't played a lot and stuff that the coach has said. And unfortunately, that was the spotlight that was on him when he tried to clear the puck and didn't do so in overtime. But, I mean, I don't know, as a goalie, I mean, I'm sure you're all different. But is there something that's said before a game, during a game, when changes like that kind of happen where a guy is playing on the blue line who just hasn't played a lot?
The biggest thing you can do, knowing Freddie the way I do, the biggest thing you can do is just talk. Just talk out there for that defense, and obviously for your teammates in general, but for that D specifically. Hey, man on, hard around, reverse, eat it, you know, whatever, D to D, like that kind of stuff, just to help him through the game, help talk him through the game. That would give him confidence and allow him to be able to execute plays under pressure. You know, one of the things about the Caps is they've got a heavy team that can come in and jam you on the forecheck, and if you're a D-man, unfortunately, sometimes put your face in the glass. So being a little bit more vocal helps. Plus, Freddie plays the puck really well, which is also a big asset. But that's a tough spot for Marincin, as you pointed out, especially when Babs said some less than flattering things about him. Then you got to lean on him. So that's exactly why, as a coaching staff, you've got to be really selective. I mean, we all know that Babs has done an amazing job this year, no question. But you got to be really selective because you said that about Marincin, and then we saw the play. And then you had mentioned something about Tommy Wilson.
I know, I brought that up earlier.
Right? You know what I mean? And then Tommy Wilson goes out and gets the GW. So you just got to be a little bit careful with that. But just to kind of revisit it a little bit, one thing that I like about Freddie is, you know, and I go back to knowing him when he first came up with Anaheim, their goalie coach, Sudsy Mirage, is from Toronto too. And Sudsy just said he's got a great disposition, and he does. And I've spoken to Freddie about that. And, yeah, it was a little bit of a tougher transition in first coming to Toronto. You don't have Fowler, you don't have Vatanen, you don't have Lindholm, et cetera, et cetera. But what it was and is a great opportunity. And he's a stabilizer. He's got an easy personality. Guys love him. He works hard. Guys love playing in front of him. And you can see that impact that he has. And, Patty, I'm sure you can relate to this too. As an offensive guy, when you've got a goalie that you know is going to make the majority of the saves, it just gives you confidence to play your game.
Yes.
You don't always have to chip and chase. You don't have to dumb down and play a simple game. And with the skill and talent that the Leafs rookies have, I think the biggest underrated thing, not underrated, but that's probably the least valued, is just how stable Freddie's been and how that's allowed Willie Nylander to play his game and Mitch Marner to play his game and, of course, Austin to play his game and Connor Brown. Those guys aren't short on confidence, and a big part of that is they know that they've got a stable horse in the net for them that plays well and, as I said, can handle the puck and is an easy personality to play in front of.
He also had a big hit himself last night when he came out of the crease. We know Caps fans were calling for the penalty there, but he was pretty steady in net, and obviously the Leafs want more of that from him in Game 2. Weeksy, thanks so much for taking the time, my friend.
My pleasure. Lunch on you when I'm back home in Teal. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, nice try.
Thanks, guys.
What a guy. Kevin Weeks, former NHL goalie, knows all about, you know, going deep into the playoffs, especially when he was with the Carolina Hurricanes there, now NHL Network analyst. Word coming out of the optional skate from the Toronto Maple Leafs, Nikita Zaitsev expected to miss Game 2. I guess we're not really surprised there, but Mike Babcock saying that he lobbied hard for Zaitsev to get out onto the ice today, and that didn't happen. So Nikita Zaitsev looks like he's going to be out again for Game 2.
Why are you commenting on the guy can't play or he would play? Like, that's one of the things about Babcock and the injuries. What it does is you're putting your own guy in a weird spot now. Like, just don't talk about, don't say you don't, it's not up to you. You're the coach. You don't decide anything.
It's up to the medical staff.
Well, that's right. It is. And this guy has a concussion. So what are we even talking about here? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Morgan Riley, Mike Babcock saying one of the best games he saw him play. And we knew he'd be playing, you know, right side, left side, kind of going back and forth. He was being paired up with Matt Hunwit there. How did you think Morgan Riley responded in that Game 1?
No, I thought he was good. I thought him and Gardner did what they had to do. I mean, that's a lot of pressure, and I think that's why Babcock would make a comment like that. Is that one of the best games I've seen Morgan Riley play in his career? Not even close. But Zaitsev's not coming back anytime soon. So you better make sure that the guys you need understand that they're important. You liked what they did. You're trying to build some confidence. I think they're in some trouble, personally. I just don't see them being able to get through a game so easily in their own end in the future. It doesn't add up. And, you know, that's one of the things we'll have to look for in Game 2. Can Washington forecheck better? Because that was really what they couldn't do until the third period. Let's not forget, though, Washington had 44 shots last night. Like, let's not pretend that somehow the Leafs were the better team for three periods and then Washington got lucky in overtime.
Freddie Anderson came up with highlight reel saves.
He was extremely good. So I think it's hard to weigh the good, the bad, you know, the negative, the positive, the fact that they had a game really on the table to win and they didn't, but they did a lot of good things and all that other stuff. But that's for us to worry about. I think if you're the Leafs, you feel good about the last game, and you that's when tomorrow comes, you're thinking more about that than the wasted opportunity, I think. That will linger a little longer.
Yeah, you have to. To give yourself a chance,
It's one game, you know? Mm-hmm. And then further into the series, that's where the mental stuff, the doubt that we've been talking about, mm-hmm. Well, that goes both ways. The better team isn't just the only one that can get doubt. So what happens if the Leafs play like they did again and they lose again? Now you're saying, well, wait a second. This is the best team in the league. We've played pretty well. Maybe we've played better than we even played during the regular season against this team. We still can't beat them. So now you have the doubt on that side. So, again, this is the playoffs. This is why it's so fun to watch because, like Bob said, and I totally agree, momentum does not carry over game to game. Doesn't carry over period to period. We've seen that way too many times already, not to believe it. So that's why it's fun to watch.
Well, and that's where you have to be careful, again, with a team like Washington. When Justin Williams gave his first intermission interview and he was asked about, you know, being back on the heels and being nervous and the Leafs taking it to them. And he's like, well, maybe the fans feel that way, like referring to the Washington Capitals fans. Maybe they're nervous. Maybe they're, what is it, the pucker factor that Mike Babcock referred to a couple days ago where I had to go and look that up.
We're not going to go down that road.
No, but he said maybe the fans feel that way, but that's not how we're feeling.
It's one period.
Because, he's like, we have two more periods to go. We change it up. And there's that mentality, which he's been there, done that before. And that's the kind of voice you need, which the Leafs do have that. I mean, you got Brian Boyle, who's gone down that route. You have Matt Martin, who, you know, played quite decently and far into the playoffs last year. I mean, you've got a lot of guys who can still be that voice. But here's the thing. See, I think the Leafs can still put up a good fight. I think they can still have a really good chance at winning game two. Because to me, the Austin Matthews line needs to wake up. Imagine if Nylander, but here's the thing, imagine if Nylander.
It's funny, you never say stuff like that. I couldn't agree more, but it is funny.
I know. But that's the thing. Imagine if Nylander could sustain what he did in the first 5 minutes. Imagine if he just did that for another 5 minutes. He didn't have to do it for the entire game, but he literally went silent. I don't want to just point the finger at Nylander, but I just say that because he is so dynamic. He is so shifty like a Mitch Marner. He's got this incredible shot where he picks corners. It's a laser. And when you're going up against a guy like Braden Holtby, I mean, just throw the puck on net. And I just think that he's got those sneaky shots where he can get it past Holtby. So if he wakes up, if that line can be better game two, then you've got the full four lines just
gotta,
like...
You got to find a way to get something more, certainly, significantly more out of that line. You got to find a way. I mean, you bring up Nylander. That's great, but that's one side of the ice. There's a reason everything gets funneled over to the left. And I know you always, like, you're giggling again. You want to laugh because it's Hyman. And the book is out. Everybody knows.
Well, and I think the reason why, here's the thing. It's a giggle of exasperation because I do agree with you. I think when you're in the playoffs, the leash needs to be short. And I don't know if Mike Babcock is going to change it up here's the thing. I will tell you right now, I will lose my mind if the OV line, the Backstrom OV Oshie line, is not good in game two and Trotz changes them up. And if the Matthews, Nylander, Hyman line is still not good either in game two and Babcock doesn't change them up, that's when I'll lose my mind.
Okay. No, I agree.
Because I'll be like, why is Trotz changing it up and Babcock isn't? Come on. That's what will actually tick me off. So we'll see how that plays out. So game two will go tomorrow. It's a 3-2 overtime loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs in game one against the Washington Capitals. But new day, new game on Saturday. That's it for us. Have a good weekend, my friend. I will see you next week. Happy Easter. And the Scott MacArthur Show's coming up next. So stick around here as you continue to listen to TSN 1050 Radio.